Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
And University of Rodan political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning to you.
Good morning, all.
And we're pleased to welcome as our guest Rhode Island Republican gubernatorial candidate Giovanni Ferosi. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Giovanni Ferosi, let's start with the most basic question. Why are you running for governor?
Vision. You need a governor that's going to actually lead people to somewhere, that somewhere being a prosperous future. I very quickly realized that no one in the campaigns that are in motion, and certainly not with the incumbent, can provide an overall future for Rhode Island. And so, you know, I asked myself, do I sit the sidelines and just kind of watch this, or do I take all of my skill set earned in many, many ways through education, the military, living in Rhode Island, being an Italian immigrant, serving in the Senate, building a billion-dollar company, family, five kids, the whole nine yards. Do I take all of that experience and bring the dialogue that I routinely have on a daily and weekly basis to the people of Rhode Island and make sure we're plugged into the future?
Some people look at news reports about your business interests. They say if there are questions about your finances, why should you be trusted to manage the state? How do you respond?
Well, it's very simple. First of all, they're incorrect statements. You know, I am a tremendous manager of finances. What I've done is I've sacrificed my own personal finances to subsidize periods of uncertainty, periods of, you know, where we have a trademark conversation that's not finalized. And so I did it for as long as I could. And then, you know, when it became a legal argument, and let the courts take it on. But, you know, whenever I'm highlighted for, you know, particular documents or activity in a courtroom setting, well, I kind of look at what the rest of the dialogue that's missing does for the people, and it hurts them. You know, it would be the same as, you know, let's say a Jamie Dimon decided to run for president. Would you then, you know, say to him, there's 12,800 customers that sued you for, you know, XYZ, or maybe Brian Moynihan from, you know, Bank of America decides to run for office someday. Are they going to say, oh, there's, you know, 32,600 mortgage customers that say you messed up their house? You know, it's not him. He's the, you know, CEO of organizations. And so, you know, as the CEO, I take responsibility and I fight hard and I work through it. And frankly, I'll be victorious. It's a matter of time. And there'll be a lot of people apologizing. But remember, I do it for two things that I sacrifice my personal finances. Number one is that Rhode Island needs jobs. And when it comes to that, you know, I have no peer in the last 5-6 years in the creation of those jobs. You know, myself, along with Carolyn, created over 4,000 jobs inside the state of Rhode Island.
Okay, let's hold you there and go to a question from Scott.
In one of your opening salvos, you said that you'd be willing to work with labor to get rid of union agency laws. In other words, make Rhode Island a right-to-work state. Is there any labor leader that you can mention who's willing to work with you on that?
Well, obviously, I know the labor leaders, and, you know, I've served in the Senate back in the early 90s, in the mid-90s. I believe I would have a good rapport if we were to sit down. Now, the issue itself is, as you said, is one of those dynamite issues, right? It explodes before you even start to say hi. But we have to recognize that 28 states, not 8, 28 states are now right-to-work states.
But they're not in our region. And I talked to George Nee, who's head of the AFL-CIO,
sure.
And he says that what you're saying is basically nonsense, and he has no interest at all in working with you and doesn't understand labor leaders who would.
Oh, I'm sure that's the default position, and I respect that, and I respect that that's, you know, the talking points. What I'm saying is this. You need the designation. If we want to understand that the real jobs are going to be, when you look around, the guys who make the chairs, the chairs that you have in the office here, you know, it takes whatever, or the guys who are going to make the robots to make the chairs, or the robots that are going to make the robots and the people who are going to manage those. All of those mass manufacturing facilities, they're only going to be located in states that have right-to-work laws. And so what can we do in Rhode Island to bridge the conversation? So where I start is I say, let's incorporate it in a, you know, a future year. So let's say 2025, right? So it gives us a good 7-year start. And then the actual right to work legislation we have in Rhode Island might not look like everybody else's. It might have a little asterisk, but you know what? At least we have the designation. Don't let the big companies just look to South Carolina and North Carolina and all these other places, Texas, Arizona, and just instead bypass Rhode Island in the discussion.
Now, why do you think Amgen has just made a huge investment here and announced more jobs, even though we're still not a right to work state, obviously?
Two-part answer. Number one is there's familiarization. Number two, there are tax incentives that were provided to the organization. Naturally, you know, everyone wants to take credit for the tax cuts on a national level, and then locally, whatever incentives were promoted. But again, there's familiarity. And listen, nobody really ever wants to leave anywhere. But if they're forced to, they'll make the decision, it'll go. What I'm talking about is attracting business, and I'm talking about new business.
Let's go to a question from Maureen.
You're in a Republican primary with two other candidates. There's less than 80,000 Republican voters. Where do you expect your electoral support to come from among those voters in terms of your competition? And more importantly, your financial support. How are you going to raise money?
Okay, electorally is really where the game plan is, right? The strategy to win. So mine is very simple. I assume I'm in third place, or at least I hope so. I don't want to be in second. I don't want to be at the top. You know, I'm an experienced person. You don't want to be at the top right now. You can only go down. What I see happening is when I decide to press the gas, so I want to first make sure the scene is set, because frankly, Patricia Morgan can, for all intents and purposes, decide she might not want to run, right? Because she already holds a seat. She's the House Minority Leader. All the way up until the end of June, she might look at the whole scene and say, you know what, I have a pretty good job. I'm just going to stay where I am. So I don't know what the story is yet. But assuming that she's in the race along with Alan Fung, my move is to pass her. That's my only move. I wait till July. I pass her. Once I pass her, now I have Mayor Fung, and we will present our platforms, present ourselves. And I believe I will win that.
Where among the
so
voters?
So I actually have 39 cities and towns in the state of Rhode Island with a 5-county strategy. We actually count votes anywhere from my barber, who has 46 people, down to, you know, what we've designated as each town individual and each county individual, and also have it broken down even further. So we've actually are bringing our own people. In addition to that, we have an open primary process. So it allows for those that might not be comfortable, who are Democrats, who want to support me, to only go to the independent affiliation and then come and vote for me. I'm the guy who's been in before the internet, who's been in somebody's basement, who had reel-to-reel names of individuals producing paper lists that told me, go vote, you know, go knock on so-and-so's door, and that's worth two votes, and that's an R. The sophistication that I bring to this campaign is second to none.
How about the money?
So on the money side, twofold. Number one is a lot of people spend money to introduce themselves. So I will do that because I want to, you know, certainly have a positive message and introduce myself. But I have millions of dollars worth of earned media and bought media that I already have at my disposal. So I've saved a lot of that to use as a barrage when necessary, which in my time frame is July and August. At the end of the day, I do think that the budget we've looked at for $360,000 to $500,000 in the primary will be coming from supporters of mine in particular, and then obviously the voter base.
We're out of time, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And GOP Rhode Island gubernatorial candidate Giovanni Ferosi.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, you can find a lot more on our website at ripr.org.